As we heard earlier in the program, a federal judge has blocked the Trump administration from deporting unaccompanied migrant children under a public health emergency order. One of the architects of that policy is senior White House advisor Stephen Miller, who has been behind many of the administration's controversial immigration policies. With a new administration coming, Miller will soon lose his prominent role in the White House, but our next guest argues he will still have a lasting impact. Gene Guerrero is the author of Hatemonger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda. And Gene, you argue that it is impossible to truly understand the Trump era without first tracing Miller's ascension to the role as Trump's senior advisor. Say more.
Exactly. You know, I had been reporting out of the busiest border crossing in the United States, and I kept hearing this narrative out of the White House that, you know, that the family separation policy and all of their other immigration policies were about law and order, that they were just trying to keep Americans safe. But I knew from my experience reporting on the ground that that was not the case, that they were primarily targeting families who were breaking no laws. So I felt that if I really wanted to understand the intentions behind the immigration policies, I was going to have to look at the person who was shaping the policies, and that person being Stephen Miller, and understanding what motivates him.
Understanding what motivates Stephen Miller, and in your book, you actually draw a through line between Miller's upbringing in liberal blue state California, where he grew up in Santa Monica, and his conservatism, which began in middle and high school. Who and what were his influences?
Exactly. You know, Stephen Miller is truly a product of the California of the 90s. Today, most people think of California as this very blue state, kind of leading the charge against Trumpism in many ways. But back then, there was a lot of anti-immigrant hostility and a real resurgence of white supremacy that is sort of a microcosm for what we're seeing nationally today. You know, the governor, Pete Wilson, was blaming all of the state's fiscal and crime problems on immigrant families. There were advertisements running on television that showed families crossing the border and an ominous narrator's voice saying, "They keep coming." And so Stephen Miller was internalizing this rhetoric and, you know, acting it out in his very diverse public high school. He would go around telling his Mexican classmates to speak English, to go back to their countries. He would go into school board meetings to argue passionately against measures to improve racial equity. And what I found through my reporting for the book is that during this time period in his life is when a man named David Horowitz came into Stephen Miller's life and became almost like a father figure to him. You know, Horowitz is a former Marxist turned right-wing radical who believes that everything that we hold dear in American society is a result of white men. It's a completely ahistorical idea that ignores the central role of people of color in this country's history, but these are ideas that appealed to Stephen Miller. It gave him a framework to understand a feeling of displacement that he was undergoing at that time period. And, you know, he gave him the tools to fight multiculturalism, which he came to perceive as an existential threat.
And what's interesting, what you're saying here is he learned the tools to fight multiculturalism, but in many ways using some of the same tactics that those in the civil rights movement used to really call attention to discrimination and segregation regarding people of color.
Exactly. Because David Horowitz came from the radical left and joined the radical right, he taught men like Stephen Miller the weapons of the civil rights movement to attack civil rights. So, for example, casting white conservative men as victims of discrimination based on their skin color, using terms like racist or oppressor to describe communities of color, you know, completely inverting and deflecting the language of the civil rights movement and of the left.
Last year, former Breitbart editor Katie McHugh shared emails from Stephen Miller showing his belief and endorsement of white supremacy. And you actually met with her in the course of writing this book. What did she help you understand in piecing all of this together?
You know, she tells me that he helped to radicalize her at a young age when she was feeling vulnerable and when she was feeling displaced by pumping her full of, you know, information from these websites that falsely depicted people of color as somehow innately more violent than white people. You know, the use of false crime statistics about Black people and about immigrants are a very common white supremacist recruiting tactic. And this is something that Stephen Miller used with Katie and led to her radicalization, where she began to espouse very racist beliefs. And it wasn't until she realized that this movement was, you know, ultimately going to lead to acts of mass violence that she decided to separate and try to atone for some of her behavior by sharing these emails with Stephen Miller.
Miller never agrees to an interview with you, but you do talk with several people he grew up with and some people in his close circle. But others, mostly in Trump's camp, have pushed back against your assertions. You've actually said that Steve Bannon has called you an insane hater. What has been the reaction and response to your book, and why is it important now?
Well, I mean, so the reaction has been a recognition, and I think an increased willingness among, you know, our nation's storytellers, our nation's journalists, to call white nationalism by its name. I think there's been a real reluctance, you know, from day one of the Trump administration to call the agenda what it is, which is a white nationalist agenda. I didn't write this book to tell readers that Stephen Miller has hate in his heart. But what I can tell you is that he is fluent in hate, and he deliberately uses the language of hate and reaches out to communities to try to incite hatred. You know, based on strategy papers that I reviewed that talk about the political utility of hatred, this is not an inaccurate way to describe what the administration is doing. Stephen Miller has used hate mongering to divide Americans and to rally people around an agenda that is pulled directly from think tanks funded by white supremacists who believe in population control for non-white people.
You know, we're having this conversation right now as we're entering a new year and a new administration. But you've noted that one of Stephen Miller's lasting influences will be how he has changed the way the Department of Homeland Security functions domestically. In what ways?
Exactly. You know, one of the most surprising things about reporting the story of Stephen Miller's life was the realization that this is so much bigger than the immigration issue or even issues related to racial and social justice. Because, you know, Stephen Miller is essentially a public relations flack who, at the age of 31, without any policy experience, was put in charge of the Department of Homeland Security, which is supposed to protect Americans from everything from, you know, domestic terrorism to cyber warfare to things like pandemics. And he, from day one, narrowed the focus of the department to target communities of color, so and specifically immigrant families. And Homeland Security experts who I spoke to for the book tell me that this left Americans more vulnerable to a range of real threats like the pandemic and, you know, like white supremacist extremists who are currently on the rise.
What do you think is next for him?
Well, if Trump had won re-election, his plan was to try to eliminate birthright citizenship. You know, in our Constitution, it says that if you are born in the United States, you are automatically a citizen of this country. And Stephen Miller, you know, and Trump had deemed this to be too politically risky ahead of the 2020 elections, and they were hoping to implement it during a second term. So I believe that, you know, once they leave the White House, as they're supposed to do, that Stephen Miller will continue to pursue paths to reduce and restrict the access to legal immigration. And I think, you know, Stephen Miller, from the time he was a teenager, has been really skilled at using media. And I think that this is a tactic that he's going to continue to use to radicalize people and to instill hatred in their hearts towards communities of color.
That's reporter and author Jean Guerrero. Jean, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.